Let's zero in on the work of Fuente Latina.
Latinos harbor less anti-Semitic sentiments more than any other ethnic or racial group. They are also the number one targets of disinformation. They became the number one immigrant group that was attacked by Hamas on October 7th.
I have not heard that anywhere else but this interview. Buchim habaim and bienvenidos. Welcome back to our summer edition of Being Jewish with Jonah Platt, 30-Minute Mensches. Same vibe, same tribe, shorter episodes. My guest today has a lot to say, and she can say it in several different languages, including Spanish, Arabic, and even a little Portuguese. She is the founder and CEO of Fuente Latina, the only organization focused on empowering Spanish-speaking journalists with timely and accurate pro-Israel content. Please welcome Leah Soybel.
Thank you, Jonah.
It's a pleasure to have you here, Leah. I've been a fan of yours since I was introduced to the work of Fuente Latina, and I'm really glad to have the opportunity to share your work with my audience today. I want to go back in time a little bit during your long and impressive academic career. You studied throughout the world and really all throughout the Middle East to places where many people never get to travel, let alone study. You got to study in Morocco, Tunisia, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, the West Bank, and Gaza. I mean, there can't be a very long list of people who've gotten to do all of that. And from a, you know, Jewish and American perspective, you were studying for your master's in Cairo during the Second Intifada, and this is an experience that I've read really shifted your path and purpose. Can you tell us about what happened to you in 2001 in Egypt at that time?
It was an incredible experience, and I wish I could relive it again. But the Middle East has changed like the rest of the world, right? And I went to really have my eyes opened in to encounter and have experiences on the ground, which I think is critical and is led to what we do with media, is to let people see the facts for themselves. Let people experience these countries and the realities on the ground for themselves. I was there at the beginning of the Second Intifada, and it was the first time I'd ever seen, unfortunately, college students today are very accustomed to this, but seeing Israeli and American flags burned on a college campus. Being a Jew, being an Argentinian, being an American in Cairo, and it was a heated time. I understood why they were angry. I didn't understand why these students were angry at the United States and at Israel per se, when we were talking about a conflict that, yes, was a country away, but didn't really have any impact on the campus where we were. I participated in something called Mock Arab League, which is very similar like Model UN. And there I had the chance to participate with other students to debate the Arab-Israeli conflict. And interestingly enough, they brought in students from Gaza, from Oman, from Yemen, from Iran, from Saudi Arabia. And I found myself being the only American Jew in this three-day summit, debating things like Jerusalem, of which I was the only one who had ever visited Jerusalem. At the end of the 3 days, which were extended a little bit longer, it was an incredible experience. And I had students come up to me and say, you know, if there are more Jews like you, we want to meet them. And that to me just hit me, and it continues to hit me in everything that I do as a professional every single day, because what I came to find in those three very heated days was that it's not that they necessarily hate us. It's really that they don't know us. And that requires a communication strategy and an engagement strategy to bring our communities together. And it's not just isolated to the Arab world. I find that every single day in my work in the Hispanic world.
We're going to get into that work in the Hispanic world for sure, but I want to stay with the Middle East a little bit until we get there. First of all, you said just a few moments ago, you said, I get what they were angry. I just don't get why they were angry necessarily at Israel or America. So what anger did you understand?
I understood that they felt provoked, a lot of these students, because an Israeli going on the Temple Mount, right? And without the right context or information, that would have probably seemed a revoke of the status quo, so to speak. In the Arab world, there is lots of disinformation, as there is in every single language, and the assumption that the Jewish people don't have a right to the Temple Mount. And so in that time that Ariel Sharon visited the Temple Mount, which is some claim sparked the Second Intifada, that was what not only triggered, as analysts say, the Intifada itself, but also the protests and the burning of flags that I saw on campus.
Okay, so you get all this knowledge, you speak all these languages, you spend all that time in the Middle East, and now you're focused on the Spanish-speaking world. How did that happen?
I'm Argentinian, American, Israeli. My family fled Argentina during a political turmoil. went to St. Louis, Missouri in the 70s. So I grew up in a place where I really had to justify a lot of identities all the time. And I was working on the ground in Israel with foreign correspondents from all over the world. And every time there were Spanish-speaking journalists brought to Israel, usually about 100 a year, I would get a phone call and say, hey, Leah, can you do a helicopter tour for this VIP? Or, hey, Leah, can you do a briefing on the Gaza border? And I saw all these journalists coming to Israel, going home, and really never covering Israel again, which I thought was a really bad return on investment. And at the same time, all of this was going on, and I was getting the Hey Leah calls. All of a sudden, there was like this epiphany of the Latino vote, of these numbers. Look, now today, there are 63 million Latinos in the United States. There's 500 million Spanish speakers worldwide. We have to focus on them. They're really important. And this was all going on. And in the background, I was seeing Iran communicate in Spanish. Hezbollah had long been communicating in Spanish. Other countries, particularly Russia and others. So in looking at the landscape and seeing where I could build my niche, which for me as a soccer player is very important to find my lane and to stick into it. It was looking at, you know, there was a lot of interest because of the Arab Spring and the Arab world. And obviously English language was very common because everybody speaks English, but nobody was focusing on the Latinos. And I was working at a place that I was lucky enough to have been able to spend 2 years building a Spanish language program to see if there was interest. And what we discovered in 2 years was an insatiable appetite on behalf of the Spanish-speaking media to have better access and information related not only to Israel, but the broader Middle East. Because one thing that most people really don't know is that there is a very large Arab, particularly Lebanese, Palestinian, and Syrian diaspora in Latin America. And so although they're Christian, they're not Muslim, the majority of them, there is this interest in the culture and what's happening geopolitically vis-a-vis these other countries in the Middle East in relation to Latin America. There wasn't a bridge. There were correspondents on the ground, but there wasn't a bridge bringing these two worlds together. And that's precisely why I decided to found Fuente Latina. And the same month I founded Fuente Latina, Iran launched its 24/7 television news network, Hispan TV.
Wow. Good thing you came along. Just out of curiosity, the Middle Eastern diaspora populations you mentioned, are they localized in any specific countries or they're sort of spread out all across Latin America?
They're spread out across Latin America. Interestingly enough, when Jews left during the Ottoman Empire, so did the different Arab
other minority groups.
Yeah, the minority groups. So you have Lebanese. In countries particularly like Colombia, you have the largest Palestinian diaspora community in Chile, estimated to be about 500,000. You have a mix of Syrian and Lebanese in Argentina. You also have a large Palestinian diaspora community in Honduras, the second largest in South America, Latin America. So you have a mix here and there, and in between, peppered all over, are Jewish communities.
Wow. So how big of a problem is anti-Jewish bigotry in the Spanish-speaking world?
If you look at the United States, for example, or if you look at the Jewish, you know, pro-Israel activity, whatever you want to call it, in the English-speaking world, you see a lot of organizations. In the Spanish-speaking world, we don't have that many at all. And so that requires the few of us working in these spaces to be incredibly strategic in how we approach certain issues. So, you know, what an issue that might be a problem or a challenge for Argentina is definitely not what it is for Chile. What we see in Spain, right, doesn't necessarily impact Latin America, the United States.
Right.
But there are narratives that bleed over, as we see. And now, particularly, if you think of it and look at it as the Spanish-speaking world, with the exception of Spain, you haven't really seen protests, anti-Israel protests, since October 7th in Latin America. Now, that's starting to change with the increasingly well-organized leftist political groups that are now getting together with these organizations that we've seen, particularly in the United States. And we're seeing this now kind of become the underbelly of the protests, and particularly the deportation protests that we're seeing in the United States today.
Let's zero in on Spain for a second. A lot of people watching this will have seen recently, you know, the big rally in Spain. There's a strong anti-Israel sense in Spain these days, which I know personally I feel frustrated by, just due to the history of Jews in that country, which I know, having spoken to Stuart Weitzman on my show, who is building a Jewish Spanish museum there, a lot of Spaniards are not educated about. What can be done in Spain in terms of communication, and what are you seeing in terms of what you are providing to Spain?
So when we started Fuente Latina 13 years ago, I can tell you that the perception of Israel and Jews vis-a-vis the elite Spanish non-Jewish media was not good. And all the research continued to show that Spain was one of the most anti-Semitic countries in Western Europe. When we look at the communications field, at the public relations, at the media field, you know, what we always tend to focus on are those that are the loudest. I can say anecdotally behind the scenes, now we have two staffers in Spain. And yes, they've gone through, I would say, different challenges because of the organization for whom they work, which is Fuente Latina. But we have so many allies in the non-Jewish Spanish language media after having visited Israel with us, after continuing to engage with us. But if we forget about the noise for a second and all the really horrible, distressing images that we're seeing, and particularly anti-Semitic acts against Israelis and Jews in Spain overall, when that subsides, the reality is that we still do have in politics, in communities across Spain, and particularly in where we focus on it in the media, quite a few allies. But these are relationships that were built long ago and that continue to be maintained till today, which I think is a very important tool and element to take into consideration when we're looking at how bad everything is. If we see the erosion of allyship in these key strata of which, if we're looking at influence, then I would start to worry. I'm worried by what I see overall, but I'm not worried, and I'm actually feeling quite confident about Spain in the long term, because we have not lost the relationships in very important media positions across the board.
What can you shed some light on for us in regards to the work you're doing with the Spanish-speaking population in America?
There's so much opportunity for allyship for the Jewish people and for Israel. And it really boils down to a few key issues. So the one is their numbers. They currently make up 63 million of the total U.S. population. They're slated to be more than 30% of the total U.S. population by 2050. They're young. There's 1 million Latinos turning 18 every year, and they're becoming more politically active. And as we saw in the last presidential election, it was Latinos who really overturned a lot of these states that were thought to be blue and turned them red. And moving forward, they will be more of an influential voting bloc, I believe. And if we're looking at the future of the U.S.-Israel relationship, and we're thinking of 30% of the total U.S. population, Spanish being the second most spoken language in the United States, Latinos are very important, and they should be very important, not only to the U.S. Jewish community, but also to Israel. And the reality is that we are not speaking to them, neither as a U.S. Jewish community or from Israel's side. There are a lot of bad actors who are speaking to them. And part of our daily work at Fuente Latina is maneuvering around them and making sure that the disinformation that they're spreading about the United States, about Israel, fueling anti-Semitism, aren't reaching these audiences, which all of the public opinion research that has been done by several groups, including Fuente Latina, all shows one very, very important thing. And that is Latinos harbor less anti-Semitic sentiments more than any other ethnic or racial group. But they are also the number one targets of disinformation that's fueling anti-Semitism. Mm. And if we're looking for allies in the fight against anti-Semitism moving forward, all signs are pointing to the U.S. Latino population.
Are there other organizations who are not doing what you do, which is singular, but others who are working in their lanes to build bridges to this population and support this allyship that you see as being, you know, allies in the work that you're doing? Or do you feel like you're on an island trying to, you know, sound the alarm to people saying, hey, we've got an amazing opportunity here. Where is everybody?
So half of my day, I'm kind of like, hey, yeah, sounding the alarm, right? There are a few. There are far less than there should be, in my opinion. And there isn't a concerted strategy as a group that's focusing on this really important population. It's a piecemeal here and there. When it comes to the Latino population, again, they're not a monolith. If you're speaking to a Mexican audience, it's not the same as speaking to a Puerto Rican audience. And East Coast does not mean West Coast, right? And so first generation is not second generation. Spanish speakers are not Spanglish speakers. So there's a lot of different variables in connecting concertedly and properly with a particular Latino target audience. But what really does matter is the local level. And that's where we're not seeing enough efforts, neither really at the national, to be honest, but more importantly, particularly in large cities like LA. LA County is home to more Latinos than any other county in the nation.
Let's say LA, and let's say I'm giving you $100 million. You can spend however you want. Like, what needs to be the first step in the city of LA? Like, who needs to be talking and who needs to be coming together? And in what way beyond just, you know, journalism and media messaging that Fuente Latina is already working on?
Media is just one element of it. With Latinos, relationships are key. Relationship building is absolutely fundamental, and it's not enough just to bring them to Israel. If there's no follow-up, then there's no relationship long-term. And we know that Latinos are becoming more politically active. They're becoming they're activists per se. They identify as activists, particularly if we're looking at like Santa Ana and the debates around ethnic studies, right? If we're looking at like a little bit broader California, we're finding that a lot of Latinos are on school boards. They're trying to become more politically influential, and a school board is a great place to start. And there needs to be greater engagement in unions, which are very popular with Latino populations, particularly because it relates to pockets of influence in Latin America. Unions sometimes wield more power than politicians. And so if we're looking at those type of models and how they are then brought and I would say tailored particularly to an American society and audience, school boards and unions play a very important role, particularly for those that are looking to become more influential and more involved with politics longer term. That starts at the campuses, that starts at the schools. And in the same way, we're talking about K-12 studies, we're talking about Holocaust education, all of that still needs to be applied to the Latino populations as well.
Okay, so now let's zero in on the work of Fuente Latina. So we've touched on the fact that you bring journalists to Israel and provide them with, you know, accurate access and on-the-ground stuff in Israel. What are your other sort of key pillars of what you guys are trying to accomplish?
So we're trying to do a couple of things. So one is educate. By bringing a journalist to Israel, a Latino journalist to Israel, you're opening their eyes. You're giving them an experience and an opportunity to get a byline. People of color, particularly Latinos, are underrepresented in newsrooms, particularly women. And so by giving Latina female journalists and Hispanic journalists in general an opportunity to get a byline, which is a career maker for some journalists, right? So you take them to what is now, unfortunately, the biggest hotspot for news coverage right now in the world, and you allow them to get a byline from this hotspot, that's something that goes on their resume. One thing that's also very, very important to understand with the Latino community is typically of their top three bucket list items overall for any individual that you'll meet is a visit to Tierra Santa, the Holy Land. And so by getting to have that experience, to be able to check that off, whether it's their desire or their abuelitas or their mamás or papás, whatever it is, they're checking off something that's important to them. And then we can start to check off something that's important for Israel and the Jewish people, and that's accurate news coverage in Spanish.
Is the biggest thing that you're providing just the means by which they can take these trips because their, you know, local station or whatever isn't able to send them abroad to cover international news?
No. That's just the beginning of the model and of the process. So in analyzing the space, we saw that there are a couple Spanish-speaking correspondents in Israel who've been there for decades. Some of them write for some pretty inobjective outlets, right? And this is what comes over to the United States, to Spain, to Latin America, kind of dominates the narrative in Spanish. So the model of how Fuente Latina works is to drive a wedge between those biased outlets that are on the ground in Israel, covering and trying to air Israel's dirty laundry all day long, is we focus on correspondents outside of Israel, in Spain, across the United States, and in key countries, strategic countries in Latin America, that we bring them, we develop a relationship with them, we identify who are the up-and-comers, who are the most influential, whether it's digital, whether it's influencers, whether it's journalists, TV, print, or radio, or audio, and getting them to Israel and developing the relationship with them and having them cover stories of which they are required to participate in Puente Latina's trip is just the first step. The second step is, as media professionals, they're required to continue covering stories. And so the purpose of the trip is also for them to be able to connect with Puente Latina and my staff, and knowing that we are a reliable source of information for them moving forward. And so when they want to cover something related to Mexican-Israeli hostages taken hostage on October 7th, or Argentinian media that want to cover the five Argentinians that are still in captivity right now, rather than trying to find something off a newswire or calling from Buenos Aires and trying to figure out how the heck do I cover this from so far away, they know that they can pick up the phone with my staff 24/7, and we are able to tailor the speaker, the content, the story specifically for their particular target audience. Once they come on the trips with us, what we do different from other organizations is that our trips are only in Spanish, and we only meet with Latinos that are in Israel. And we just finished producing a 4-episode docuseries about the Latino survivors and hostages of October 7th. It's a story that's really not known in the English-speaking space. And what we found through our work, which we knew beforehand, because Latinos in Israel have always been our storytellers, on October 7th, many of them became victims. And what we found is they became the number one immigrant group that was attacked by Hamas on October 7th, the Latin American immigrants to Israel. They were many of the founders of the kibbutzim that were decimated by Hamas.
I have not heard that anywhere else but this interview. So I'm glad to hear that information. You said you just finished it. Does that mean it's been released, or you just finished shooting it?
No. We just wrapped up post-production, and now we've been hosting private screenings. We've been accepted to 2 non-Jewish Latino film festivals, but our greatest hope and number one objective is to get this story out to the world. The non-Jewish world, of course. Many of the Jews that have seen it have all learned something that they had no idea about, particularly Latino, Latin American immigration to Israel. Why did they get there? Where did they go? Why did they happen to build their homes around a border, the Gaza border? Many were unaware that they were the founders of Ena Shlosha and Beri, Nir Oz, where the Bibas family and the Cuno family and the Horn family were taken hostage from, all of which are Argentinian.
Wow. Didn't know any of that. What's it called, so we can keep an eye out for it when it gets, you know, bought and licensed and shown all over the world?
From Your Mouth to God's Ears. It's in Spanish with English subtitles, but the title's in Spanish, and it's 7-0 for October 7th, Testigos de Terror, Witnesses of Terror.
I'm surprised it's only 4 30-minute segments. I thought you were about to tell me this was like a 12-hour opus.
It was a lot of work to cut it down, and a lot of hard decisions were made. But if we're talking and we're trying to communicate with a non-Jewish audience, first is you have to give them the context. You have to give them the history that they don't know about. So how did Latinos get to Israel? Why did they go to Israel? And why did they build these kibbutzim? And why did they become part of the story on October 7th? What we found in our work is actually a lot of audiences think October 7th only happened at Nova. And so it's really important to give the context of what happened in the kibbutzim as well. Second is Nova, the Latino survivors of Nova, including Alejandra Lopez, whose partner she called. He drove down in the middle of the attack and managed to find her and save her. He spoke to us for the first time on camera. The third episode is about the Latino hostages that came back during the November 2023 ceasefire, and those that were almost taken hostage, including the Cuno grandmother, Silvia Cuno, whose 2 grandsons are still in captivity today. Silvia Cuno saved herself the morning of October 7th in Nir Oz when the terrorists came in by saying that she's from where Messi's from. And then he said, "Oh, Messi, I like Messi." And at that moment, he put the Kalashnikov over her chest and took a selfie with her. It was a picture that went viral. When we released that soundbite of the interview with her, the exclusive interview that Puente Latina has, it went worldwide viral. It was really, really, really incredible. And the fourth episode is talking about those that are still in captivity, which we've had to update now because one of the Horn brothers and the Bibas family came back.
Leah, how does this work without you? what you're doing is so niche and so nuanced and requires so much understanding of different things and peoples and cultures and news and political events and all of this stuff. How do you scale what you're doing? Can you scale it? Or is this just like, I got to do what I can do and someone else has got to figure out the rest?
I think this is something that the Jewish world has to figure out. And I don't think that it's niche. I think that 500 million Spanish speakers and 20% of the total U.S. population is not niche. I think the trick is really finding the right talent. And I am so very fortunate. Fuente Latina is so very fortunate. We are a staff, a full-time staff of 42 media professionals, 98% of which are not Jewish. And they Amazing. Have the same level of passion as I do in telling these stories with accuracy and with objectivity. And they've survived and they've stayed with us since October 7th. We continue to hire new staff that are passionate about this. And they're not necessarily driven by faith. They're driven by storytelling. They're driven by curiosity.
Have you had any internal ideological conflict? No, none.
Never.
Because do you attribute that to just the fact that your team is seeing the truth on the ground and it sort of takes care of itself from there?
What I know to be true, and my staff know to be true, is that there's this curiosity. It's not that Jews necessarily are hated, and we know amongst Latinos there isn't, you know, the majority of Latinos aren't conspiratorial. It's not what we're seeing maybe in the extreme right and extreme left camps. These are individuals or communities or leaders that there's always been this curiosity and even admiration. And while they may be using tropey language sometimes, may turn us off as the Jewish professionals, when you start to scratch a little bit more beyond the tropey language, it's really admiration. It's how do we do what the Jews have done? How do we become like you? How do we become successful like you? Anecdotally, when the whole Chappelle thing happened and we did an event for our Latin Jewish media entertainment.
Which Chappelle thing?
The first Chappelle thing on Saturday Night Live.
Okay, yeah.
And talking about the Jews run Hollywood. And right. I had 80 non-Jewish celebs and top influencers in Miami speaking with a Spanish speaking, a Cuban-raised Holocaust survivor. They never met a Holocaust survivor before. And I was explaining, like, what is anti-Semitism? Because we throw that language, that word around a lot. But what we find with Latinos is that they don't know really what it means or how to identify it. And so in trying to break it down for them so that they would understand, I had journalists that we've worked with for a long time that came up to me and they said, wait, you don't run Hollywood? I thought you did. And I thought that was a good thing. So while it feels a little weird, at the end of the day, it really comes from a good place, a place of admiration, a place of friendship. And what we find by and large with Latinos is that they think that we are a closed community. They don't realize that a lot of the time that becomes because of security precautions, right. And also because of, in particularly in Latin America, fears of intermarriage. We're trying to just maintain, you know, in these small communities, our customs, our traditions, our kashrut. And when they get to have a peek, right, the door cracks open a little bit and they get to actually experience it for themselves. That's when you see that their passion for learning more overtakes them. So much so that I have staff in countries that have broken relationships with Israel are actually have gone to the local synagogue to learn Hebrew on Wow. their own. And they've never been to Israel. They're fascinated about what they've learned through their research for the production purposes of the content that we're distributing. And yet they continue to want to learn and to even study the language.
That's all we can hope for. If everybody out there was a neutral, curious party, we'd be in great shape. Leah, if people want to support the work that you are doing, where do I send them? What can they do? What do you need?
First of all, visit our website, fuentelatina.org, and there you'll find a link to the docuseries that we've produced.
You can watch it now.
You can watch the trailer, you can reach out to us, and we can send you a link so that you can get a little more of a sense of a taste of the content itself. But while we're holding out for a deal, that we're trying to only do private screenings and sending private links.
But I'm going to email you about that.
You should definitely email me about that.
Yeah.
But puentelatina.org, and we are on TikTok, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, and there is even my information. I encourage anybody that wants to reach out to get involved to contact me directly, and let's see how we can get you involved in creating better Latino Jewish allyship.
Leia, thank you for everything you're doing to bring truth and clarity and Jewish pride to the global conversation. And thank you for being here with us today and sharing in your fantastic and important work.
Thank you, Jonah. It's a pleasure.
All right. She's a mensch. It's been 30 minutes. I'm Jonah Platt. Adios, amigos.